Hey everybody, Ian J. Malone here of the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. Before we get started with tonight's episode, I wanted to take a quick second to give you guys a little tip about something. Coming up tonight, we get to roll out a brand new sponsor, and it's one I'm really excited about for two reasons. One, because we have a lot of authors who listen to this show, and I think this sponsor really has something to offer them. Second thing, we got a lot of readers who listen to this show, and I think this sponsor really has a lot of cool stuff to offer them too. So if you want to know what I'm talking about, it's coming up in our Podmail segment in the back half after halftime. And again, I think you guys are really going to like it. Not to mention, we have a fantastic guest on deck for tonight. So let's say we get started, huh?
The following is a production of Shark Flight Media. Shark Flight Media. Shark Flight Media. Shark Flight Media.
Now entering the nexus of geekery and guy world in 3, 2, 1, mark.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
This is the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. I am your host, Ian J. Malone. Going to be joined here in just a little bit by my usual partners in crime. That would, of course, be Rob Howe, Kevin Steverson.
Go, dogs.
And we're already at it. Good Lord, we didn't even get 20 seconds in before we got it. At least let me thank our presenting sponsor, sir. Don't be rude. Presenting sponsor is, of course, the one, the only, Chris Kennedy Publishing. Doesn't matter what you're into, folks. If it's military sci-fi, space opera, paranormal romance, urban fantasy, high fantasy, even stuff about the craft, they've got it all over there. So head on over to chriskennedypublishing.com. Sign up for the email list while you're there. Get yourself a free email or free ebook, as it were, and keep up to date with all the latest and greatest there. You can also follow CKP on Facebook through their groups. That would, of course, be the CFP, the Factory Floor group, and the 4HU Merc Guild group. So lots of good stuff happening there. So now that I've formally done the bill thing, fellas, how are we doing this evening?
We're doing good. It's a great week to win the national championship. Might as well be the SEC championship is the national championship this year. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
More than likely, Michigan's coming fast, though. No doubt.
Yeah, they allow too many points.
Mm-hmm. Rob, what's happening, man?
I will say I watched that game with the with Ohio State and Michigan. That your offensive line in Georgia is good offensive line. Hutchinson and Ajabo are rounding into form, shall we say, and that's going to be a heck of a line, a heck of a pass rush for you to stop. So that could be, if it ends up being Michigan and Georgia, that could be more interesting than I think you want it to be.
I would tend to agree with that. My money is still on Georgia, though, only because anytime you can dominate the trenches, that is the recipe to win football games. Doesn't matter if you're talking about 1965 or 2021, you can always win when you can dominate the line.
Yep, so, right.
Well, lots of stuff going on in the world of CKP books and publishing. Good Lord, guys, if you're not following us on social media, you really do need to, because between Black Friday, Cyber Monday, heading into the holidays, we have had book deals galore. I mean, massive book deals, everything from freebies to 99 centers, and of course, lots of new releases. Now, for folks who have been listening to this program, one of the things you've heard us talking a lot about lately is the rise of New Mythology Press. That has really started to pick up steam for all you fantasy readers. We've got titles cranking out left and right now. And one of the biggest among those would be a brand new series called The Eldros Legacy. And with that, my friend Rob, and also the head publisher over at New Mythology Press, has gone out and gotten one of the big guys, the big grand poobahs of that series, to come on and talk about his brand new release. It's going to be coming out here December 7th, if I'm not mistaken. So Rob, without further ado, who we got on the line tonight? And by the way, guys, before I do throw it to Rob, sorry, dude. We are doing things a little bit differently this evening. We're recording this via a different platform than normal because we ran into some technical difficulties. So if sound is a little unbalanced, well, blame it on the producer. And that would, of course, be me. Rob, take it away. Who's the interview tonight, buddy?
Well, tonight we have Todd Fonestock. And yes, he is one of the five founders of the Eldros Legacy, which I'm excited about because I'm one of the five founders, too, to be honest. And New Mythology is, we're going to be pushing these out one a month, and it's going to be something amazing. And part of the reason it's going to be amazing is because the first novel, Kyvan the Unkillable, which Todd wrote, is one of the best fantasy novels I've read in quite some time. And so we've got Todd Fonestock with us tonight to talk about his cool new book and some of his other cool things, and I'll let him take it away and introduce himself.
Grand Poobah, huh? I like that. I'm going to have to tell the rest of the founders that that's what we are now.
We ain't please on the Dudes in Hyperspace. Hey, look, we're all about nicknames and taglines. Hey. So.
And many of them we can repeat on the air.
Grand Poobah may in fact make it into the title of this particular episode. So careful what you wish for.
Well, look here. The Grand Poobah was on the Flintstones and he had that big hat. And I demand we get Todd a hat because that hair he's got is just, look, he's got it back in a ponytail right now. But when we were at 20 books, he let his hair down and his stand across from us selling all these books he was selling. And he looked like Fabio over there with just a full of locks, you know, and I'm losing my hair. And I'm like, this is bullshit of an unknown level.
Okay? My hair has long since gone. So I have
getting the Poobah hat and make him wear it because of those locks is the wrong answer.
Question though, is the Poobah hat like the Jane hat from Firefly with the little pom pom on the top? Because I don't see how you can't not have that.
It was a big, looked like a buffalo hide hat that was like a foot tall with horns on each side.
Outstanding. Oh, nice.
So it's like full on Jeremiah Johnson with horns. Oh my God. It was Jeremiah Johnson meets Vikings. That's awesome.
Yes.
We just shanghaied your interview, dude.
All right, so we're out of time. And
well, this is probably way interesting, more interesting than anything I would say. So,
all right, Todd, tell us about yourself.
Okay, so I'm Todd Fonestock. I'll just kind of go through like a real quick summary. I grew up in Durango, Colorado. I kind of was a wanderer after high school. I started traveling from state to state when I was 18. I attended and matriculated from the Colorado College. I visited Europe and Indonesia in my 20s. Then I ended up living in New York City for a couple of years. I've written over 20 novels, mostly high fantasy, and a smattering of short stories. The fantasy series that I've written, Threadweavers, the Whisper Prince series, and the award-winning Tower of the Four series, as well as, of course, The Eldros Legacy.
Nice. So, The Eldros Legacy, how did you get involved, and are you excited about it?
So, I was like car broke down, got a flat, and I just happened to be a tire rolling along the highway, and they kind of reached out and grabbed me and said, hey, would you fit on this particular wheel? And that's kind of how it all worked out. I was actually looking for a collaboration and struggling to put one together amongst a few of my writer friends. It was going really horribly just because everybody wanted to write a different genre. And I'm like, no, I want to write marketable high fantasy. And they're like, oh, I want to write this sort of think piece about, you know, a 20 something guy in New York City. I'm like, no, we got to write something that's marketable. And then of course I get this call from Mark Stallings, and he's like, hey, we want to do a collaborative thing that's D&D style fantasy. You interested? And it was like, it just fell out of the sky, exactly what I was looking for at that moment. So they interviewed me, I interviewed them, and it was a magical fit. I think that it has been just such a fun ride ever since then. This group of founders and the cohort authors for that matter are just so inspiring. Like the creativity has just been popping. I, of course, like many of the rest of the founders, have other projects that I'm working on and all of these obligations that I have to fulfill. And I really just want to chuck it all to the side and work on Eldros all the time because I'm so inspired by it.
I'm having much the same challenge there because I keep going, oh, this story is going to be great. And I actually wrote a scene today that sort of hints at the area you're writing in. We to let a little bit of the cat out of the bag, there are five continents in Eldros, the world of Eldros. And each of the founders is basically writing in their own continent, and we'll be bringing them together later. Yes, we've already gotten that question. But we've been sneaking in hints here and there, and I snuck in a hint about Noxanon, which is Todd's continent. So Todd, tell us about Noxanon and why it's the best continent, except of course for my continent of Sheeran.
Well, of course, nobody can touch Sheeran, you know.
Yeah, of course not.
So I kind of see Noxenon as the sort of, you know, battered and neglected orphan continent. Sort of, I kind of came in last to the group and everybody else had chosen their continents with their fancy dragons and their fancy, you know, volcanoes and demons and that sort of thing. And I was left with the original continent, the continent that all the other giants that had built this civilization took off from, left from. So I kind of envisioned that my giants were sort of the sickly underdogs that, you know, they couldn't go find their own continent. They just kind of got left behind. So I kind of envisioned them as slightly less powerful, but maybe a little more cunning. And so the way I started forming the history of Noxenon is that they were kind of getting beat up by various, you know, there's these great giant wars long, long ago, long before the story that we're going to tell begins, like literally thousands of years ago. This is sort of history that shaped the continent or shaped the world, rather. And I kind of envisioned the other giant clans coming in and beating up on Noxenon whenever they wanted. So what they did was they cast this great spell of darkness over the whole continent right after outfitting themselves with all of the little tricks and artifacts and magical spells that would enable them, my giants, to fight in the darkness perfectly well. So anybody coming to Noxenon was going to be at an immediate disadvantage, whereas my giants would have the home field advantage. So that was the original idea. And as it started to take shape, I essentially envisioned that Pyranon, which is run by Marie, one of the founders, their giant clan came in and dumped a miniature sun right in the middle of the continent to try and blow up the Noctum, this darkness, this magical darkness. And it did the job halfway. So now in the present, with the beginning of our story, imagine somebody took, like, you know, crude oil and like threw it across a canvas. That's what the continent looks like. And all of these little splotches of oil are these patches of magical darkness in which resides all kinds of nasty things, monsters and old castles that have artifacts from long ago. And pretty much if you take a natural light, a torch, a lantern, a candle into the Noctum, it is painful for the creatures that are in there. So they will immediately find you and kill you. So you actually can't see in the Noctum with a natural light. Now, there are some magical lights that do work in the Noctum. And that, of course, is some of what comes up in the story. How is that?
That is a great answer. And it sounds like you might have put some thought into that. Of course, I knew that already. And that's true of all five of the founders. We've all put some thought into making the continent a little bit different, which is, so each one of them will have their own flavor. Your flavor is just going to be sort of shadowy.
Shadow and light. That's all the Noxenon focuses on, light and darkness. Those are the two things that kind of make it special.
Nice. So as I understand it, you got into writing fantasy because while you love Shannara and you love Xanth and you love Dragonlance, you wanted more action and you decided you were going to write those kinds of stories and then kick it up a notch, be all Mr. Spicy and Emerald kind of thing. So is that right? And tell us about that process.
Exactly correct. So I remember that from when I was 18, but I don't remember much more aside from that. I just remember reading these books, and oftentimes we get into, you know, a long protracted description about the mountains and the castle and the, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, that's fine. It's okay. And in some cases, I mean, now I can totally appreciate longer, deeper, richer descriptions. But at the time I was like, come on. Let's get to the part where the swords come out. Let's get to the part where the dragons come out. Let's get to the part where, you know, there's a love interest or something like that. I don't want to know about the hills. So that was why I initially started that. Although, like I said, I feel that now the longer someone takes, if they're using their time and their writing effectively, I think the best novels have a little bit of a lead in, you know, where you get a little bit sunk into the world before things start happening. I think that's pretty important.
There's a balance, and it's challenging, discovered in my own writing, especially with fantasy, because you have so many things that the reader kind of needs to know, but you need to tell it to them in such a way that they don't get bored in the first few pages at the very least. And it's challenging. What is the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
So it's an interesting question because I just wrote a 1,000-word essay for Chris Kennedy Publishing that they're going to put in this little book that they're going to bring to a conference that we're going to. And I think you're going to as well, Rob, in February.
Yes.
And the answer to that essay, which was what's the best bit of writing advice you ever got, is the same answer as the question that you're asking me right now. So you had mentioned Dragonlance, which was my favorite series for a while when I was younger. And it was written by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. And I had the incredible fortune to be introduced to Margaret Weiss by Gary Paulson, actually, if you know who that is. He's quite a famous young adult author. He wrote Hatchet, if you've ever heard of that book. Got introduced to her through that and had a few short stories published with Dragonlance when I was still barely a 20-something. She gave me a bit of advice that stuck with me forever, because the first part of it I completely agreed with, and the second part of it I was like, huh? And it took me years and years to understand what she was saying. And the advice was, Todd, you can't listen to the bad reviews. And I was like, okay, I get that, right? Don't give love to the haters, just do your thing and don't listen to anybody that is trying to bring you down, right? Totally understood that. And she said, but you can't listen to the good reviews either. And I was like, what? Like, those are your fans. Those are your peeps. Those are the ones that, are in love with your stuff. Shouldn't you be listening to those fans? And I just didn't quite get it. I mean, I think maybe intellectually I understood a little bit. This past year, I finally fully, like, both in my mind and in my heart, understood what she was saying when I started to get a lot of positive feedback. Don't listen to the bad reviews. You get that, right? You don't want anybody to paralyze you and make you stop writing, make you stop evolving and stop growing, right? But don't listen to the good reviews. I didn't get that until I had quite a streak of attention on my stories at the beginning of this year. So Summer of the Fetch, my little coming of age road trip story set in the 1980s, it was a finalist for the Colorado Authors League Award for Writing Excellence, as was Tower of the Four. Tower of the Four ended up winning. Not only that, but it was also a finalist for Colorado Authors League, for the actual Colorado Book Award for the state. Anyways, and so I was kind of on a roll, and then I wrote Ordinary Magic, which was a nonfiction book with me and my son, my 14-year-old son, hiking through the 450 miles through the Colorado mountains. And the feedback on that from all of my fans was huge, right? So I was like, yeah, I got this. I'm rocking and rolling. And then got involved with Eldros Legacy, wrote Kaivan the Unkillable a lot earlier than I was expecting to, because I was so inspired. And the feedback from that was great too. Like, I mean, it was only a small group of people, but they were all like, wow, this is great. And so I'm thinking, yeah, I can't do any wrong. I'm doing really good here. This is great. So I, waited a week or so and I'm like, okay, let's get back to work. And nothing. I sat down at the keyboard, totally couldn't write. And I was like, oh, you're just a little burned out. You've been on a roll. Give yourself another week. Nothing after a week. Nothing after 2 weeks. In fact, I'm still struggling with it a little bit today. And I finished Kaivan at the end of freaking April, right? Yeah. So the explanation of what Margaret was said is that all that great feedback paralyzed me, because it wasn't that it all has to do with imposter syndrome, right? Before it was like, oh, I'm not a real author. When the naysayers get you down, it's like, oh yeah, I guess I'm not really a great writer and I should just stop. But this was different in that I was afraid I couldn't live up to what I had done before. I didn't want to put out something that was less than what I'd done before, and it totally locked me up. And the answer was, you can't listen to any of it, none of it. You are a writer and you sit down and you write, and that's what you do, and that's it. And it doesn't matter whether somebody hates it, and it doesn't matter whether somebody loves it. You got to sit down and just write and let it all just filter out. Just do your thing. If you're going to write a crappy novel, sit down and write a crappy novel, because it's way better than writing no novel at all. I can tell you that. So that was the best bit of advice I ever got.
Bill Parcells, who obviously had a fantastic career as a coach, used to call that eating the cheese. Don't eat the cheese, because you won't play well. And he would talk about that going into games. I think they've eaten the cheese, and more often than not, he was right.
The cheese being buying into the accolades or buying into their own hype.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, buying into, you know, oh, you're the best team ever. You're the best team ever. Right. Oh, no. Turns out you're not. And you almost never are. So what's the worst piece of advice you've ever gotten?
Yeah, that one I know for sure. So as a young 20 something going into college, I took 3 years off between high school and college. So I was like 22 or so, or 21 when I finally got into college. And I was so excited, you know, I was ready for college. I had taken 3 years off, so I was hungry for academia. And the class that I most wanted to take was creative writing. And I went into the creative writing class with this creative writing professor who had all these awards and things. And he told me fantasy isn't real fiction. He's like, yeah, you can write fantasy if you want, but it's not actually fiction. Fiction is this literary stuff, right, that he was talking about. And I was like, huh? And so he was right. Kevin, you are shaking your head exactly like my soul was shaking its head when he said that to me. And I actually even gave it room enough to maybe be true in my head. I'm like, okay, so he knows this stuff, I guess. So maybe he's right. Nah, it's bull. Like, I mean, anything that you want to write is actual real fiction, you know, and there's just different varying levels of people who are snooty about it. And you know what? To those who are too snooty to read awesome science fiction or fantasy, you know what? Your life is poorer for it. Go be in your own little circle, whatever.
Yeah, I agree with that. We hear all the time about how William Shakespeare is maybe the greatest writer ever in English. And of course, what did he write? He wrote stuff that was going to sell. He wrote the stuff, maybe his mentor said, you know, that Romeo and Juliet stuff, that's not actually fiction, you know?
Right.
He probably, you know, he may not have gotten that, but it's that same idea, that elitist idea that it's got to fit some sort of box, when in fact, what we're all trying to do is tell good stories with characters, and all the trappings are separate. You've written a lot of stuff. What's the thing you're most proud of?
Oh, you know, I do a lot of Comic Cons, as you know, and I sometimes get that question from people who come up and say, okay, so which one's your favorite? And I can never answer. But
No, not favorite. Right?
There's a division there. I did note that. I was just likening it to this other question that I get. So what am I most proud of? I probably would have to give that a three-way tie. And I'm not allowed to talk about Eldros, right? Because I'm most proud of Kyvan right now. Kyvan is like, I just love that story. I go back through, I'm actually doing the audiobook for it right now, and it's just really fun to get into the story again.
It's a good story.
Thank you. So that's probably what I'm most proud of. But aside from Eldros, it probably would be a three-way tie between my most recent three books, Ordinary Magic, Summer of the Fetch, and of course, The Tower of the Four, all for different reasons. And I think the uniting reason is that I think they illustrate my love of storytelling and my current skill set better than my previous books.
Nice.
I think my skills have improved, and I think you can see it in those stories.
And I love it when I look at my new books, because I can see where I have leveled up. But then there's the going back to books that are 4 years old and going, man, I wish I... Well, I couldn't be better without doing them, but oh, I'm so much better than I was then. But that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to keep growing.
Exactly.
And getting better. So you're right. We're going to work on another Eldritch Legacy book for next year, of course, and some Eldritch Legacy story. But I'm waiting for the first epic Arthurian tale of Sir Galahad the Weimaraner.
That's my dog. For anybody who doesn't know that, my dog is Galahad. And before him, a dog who passed away in 2015 was Lancelot. So, you know, Galahad in the order of things did come after Lancelot. So I thought it was appropriate. So yeah, the epic tale of Sir Galahad would probably have to be Sir Galahad and the Knight of the 12 Barfings. I think that's probably the...
I think that's every dog owner has had that one.
Unfortunately for me, that night was last night. So I've been wandering around the house where he must have gotten into something, and he's just been puking out. He's been going out eating grass and puking it up for like a whole 24 hours. We just keep an eye on him and he seems fine. Apparently that's what dogs do when they get a sick belly. They're like, ah, go eat some grass and puke it up. So he seems to be just fine. He's just in the other room there actually.
Well, we better cut this off before we get a barfing live on the show. And so tell us where we can find your stuff.
So yeah, Amazon's a great place. Here in Denver, you can get it at Tattered Cover, the Bookies, in Durango, Maria's Bookshop, at a multitude of Comic-Cons throughout the year, Denver, Kansas City, Albuquerque, I'm at Salt Lake City for FanX. And then a lot of local little things. I like to go and sell books. I enjoy actually talking to people and selling my books. So Comic-Cons is a great place to buy books. But in the meantime, yeah, Amazon's great. If you're on Amazon, you'll get all my stuff there. Awesome. And basically any bookstore, if you're willing to order it. I mean, I don't know whether it's on the shelves here and there at different bookstores, but you can certainly order them anywhere.
Yes, you can. And we'll be putting your links in show notes when we publish them online. Correct, Ian?
That is correct, sir. Anybody that's looking at this on a mobile device or wherever, if you just look right there in the show notes, there's a direct link to Todd's website and his handle where you can find him on Facebook.
Awesome. Anything else from you guys before I let Todd go and have him enjoy the rest of his night?
I have to say, in reading, I read some of Kyvan. I haven't finished it yet, but I will.
Oh, you did! That's awesome.
The first few pages sucked me in. Yeah, I mean, just the damn prologue. But anyhow, your writing style I really like, and I'm one of those that I appreciate smaller paragraphs, if you will. You know, I'm not interested in 12, 10, 12, 13 sentences in a paragraph. I like a smaller paragraph because for me, it keeps me flowing, keeps me moving, keeps me going. And so just the writing style itself, I really, really like. So,
oh, thanks, man. I like the small paragraphs too. That's the more action, right?
Yes.
So keep the story moving.
Yep. I could not agree more with that statement, dude. I was, as a guy was raised on Louis L'Amour and everything, it was about 220 pages. I enjoy tight, tight storytelling, and smaller paragraphs goes a long way toward doing that.
It's amazing how important white space on the page is to the reader being able to read a story and enjoy it.
Well, it goes back to this, you know, you're reading something and that just happened. Let me reread that. And so you read it again and you're like, that's super cool. Guess what you're not doing if the damn paragraph is 3/4 of a page long?
Rereading it.
You go, oh, that was great. No, moving on. You know what I mean?
Can't go through that again.
Yeah. It's just, you know. And the more you read something, the more it sticks with you. And then you really love the book. And then it's just, yeah, it's all part of it.
Yep. Well, thanks for that, man. I appreciate it.
Well, Todd, thanks for coming on the show, man. It was an absolute treat talking to you. And Elder's Legacy, folks, this thing is going to be a thing. Kyvan the Unkillable drops on December 7th worldwide. Go find it on Amazon or where places or books are sold. And definitely go track him down online and via his website. He's definitely a good guy to know. Todd, take it easy, man. Thanks for coming on the show. Ian.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Kevin.
Appreciate you.
And that's going to bring us down to halftime, where we thank our presenting sponsor. That would, of course, be Chris Kennedy Publishing. We say it at the top. We say it often. We say it because it's true, folks. It doesn't matter what you're into, if it's military sci-fi, of which there's a ton of that lately, space opera, urban fantasy, paranormal romance, you name it, they've got it all at Chris Kennedy Publishing. Just log on to the website, chriskennedypublishing.com. Go find the series, the author, the book that mostest warms this to your heartest, and go nuts. We got new releases abounding this week, and speaking of things that are very near and dear to my heart, that would be this week's new release. Rob, what is this week's new release?
Well, this week's new release is Three Steps to Oblivion, which is the 15th book in the Guild Wars series as part of the Four Horsemen universe. And it's by Chris Kennedy and some guy named Ian J. Malone.
Oh, that freaking guy.
That freaking guy.
What is this book about?
Well, it's hard to live when you're on the run. Taylor Van Zandt, the owner of Swamp Eagle Security, thought he was doing a good thing when he destroyed the slave ring operating out of Droxus, even though the slavers blew up the Red Diamond mine there as they tried to escape. Unfortunately, the mine belonged to a synthetic intelligence running the Merchant Guild, and it was displeased with the mine's destruction, so it put out a death contract on all the members of Swamp Eagle Security. Sometimes, though, the best way to get rid of a price in your head is to kill the person, or the synthetic intelligence, who put the mark on you in the first place. And when Sansar Inc., the head of the Golden Horde Mercenary Company, invites Taylor into a group that is trying to dispatch that SI, all Taylor can say is, yes. But the SI has amassed a huge fleet and has the ability to take over any person that opposes its will. So getting close enough to kill it will be perilous. As the Guild Wars draw to a close, it is quickly becoming a matter of us or them. And it will take all of Taylor's experience, Sansar's intel, and the help of a number of Merc companies for them to have even a small chance of success, if indeed they have any chance at all.
Kevin, what are the people saying about this book?
Well, somebody named Large Target, which is a great name, says the good old boys and gals of Swamp Eagle Security go up against the evil synthetic intelligence in charge of the Merchant's Guild that put a price on their head. But they'll need help from other North Florida mercenaries plus the Golden Horde to try and take it out. Even the Wing Hussars and the mysterious Section 51 have a role to play in this high-speed action adventure. If you are a 4HU fan or just a military science fiction fan, military space opera fan, this is a great read. So crank up some Swamp Southern Rock like Leonard Skinner, Molly Hatcher 38 Special, settle into your recliner, then enjoy a real jewel of a book. A Kindle customer says, Three Steps to Oblivion is an adventure that gives plenty of thrills and close calls. M, the newest SI in the mix, is more personable than Minerva, which makes him more of a Bond villain than an Elder God character. This gives readers hope that they might have a slight chance of surviving this one. Intrigue, backstabbing, and cold-blooded murder, all in a day's work for an SI. Sean says Three Steps to Oblivion was a thrilling page-turner that was very hard to put down. The novel continues the adventures of the 4HU and features numerous mercs from North Florida, plus several other familiar characters. It was a fantastic read that flowed nicely.
Alrighty, alrighty. Well, other stuff happening around Chris Kennedy Publishing this week. We do ourselves have a pre-release, and that would be NAMA, the latest book in the Abner Fortas ISMC series from Paul Allen Piatt. I actually did catch up with them on Facebook this week and say, how exactly do I pronounce that? Because is it Gnama? Nama Mama? Like, we had a whole debate about that on the last show, and I've already butchered it enough, so what is it? And he did confirm it is NAMA. And the G is silent. So consider yourselves informed. Hashtag the more you know. If you're interested in checking out the latest book in the Abner Fortas series, that would, of course, be NAMA, then you can go to ChrisKennedyPublishing.com and read it now before anybody else. It will go live on Amazon this upcoming Friday. But if you want to read it now, you can go get it straight through the publisher. And that's just one more way that we try and reward our readers here at Chris Kennedy Publishing. New in audio this week, we have back to the 4HU, Redacted Vice by some dude named Kevin Steverson and his buddy Kevin Eikenberry. This is book 6 of the Rise of the Peacemaker saga. So go out and get yourselves a copy of that on Audible or wherever audiobooks are served. And then finally, in other news, launch team readers are needed for Assault from Mike Massa. That is, of course, the latest book in the
Murphy's Lawless.
Yeah, in the Mission Critical series from Murphy's Lawless. And that is set in Chuck Gannon's Kane Reardon series.
And there's more this week. I mean, obviously, with Todd Fonestock, we're talking about Kyvan the Unkillable coming out on Tuesday the 7th. But I believe there was a new title, and I can't exactly pronounce it. Kevin, do you want to talk about the new title that just happened, say, across the pond?
Bergen's title, which is basically German for salvage title, just released today in Germany, and it's doing really well. As a matter of fact, it was number 14th on science fiction novels for new release and climbing. So, yeah, salvage title this month, salvage fleet the next, and salvage system over the next 3 months in German, in Germany, in the language. So, CKPI, Chris Kennedy Publishing International, doing things, and it's just now cranking up because there's going to be a lot of books coming out in different languages.
Awesome.
I can tell you we're going to have all of the Eldritch Legacy stuff going through that process as well fairly quickly because we're writing stuff that we want to have the entire world read. And so we're excited about that.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of halftime and into our open segment, which is where we all just kind of go around the horn, talk about the various things that we've got going on in our own riding lives. Whether it's projects we're working on, schedule updates, events, stuff like that that's happening around the world of riding in our necks of the woods. Kevin, I'll start with you since the iron is hot there with Salvage Title International. A lot of stuff obviously happening there, but what else are you writing these days? I know you got a few projects on the mix, right?
Yeah, I'm finishing up a story I owe for the Last Brigade Universe anthology for Bill. And I owe Rob a fantasy story for he's got one coming out during Fantasy. He had the turn-in date of tonight at midnight, but I'm going to have to see if I can talk him into a day or two or three. Rob, yes. can you hook a fella up?
I can hook a fella up.
I appreciate that.
I'm working on The Door into Winter, which is my Elder's Legacy novel, plus getting a bunch of other stuff out the door. So it's an exciting time for me, and so much so the dog's barking.
Well, not a whole lot happening in the Malone house. We're getting down to the holidays and doing the family thing there. Finally got moved into the new house, and I think we just got the last of our furniture in tonight. So, thank God. I think most of the logistics of this whole thing are over with, and I can finally start getting back into a normal routine, which means writing. So, I've got a little project that I'm working on right now. I have not had a chance to – I don't really want to unveil it just yet and tell people where it's at. That's going to be coming here very soon. But I do have some world-building stuff that I'm working on, and as I've mentioned before on the show, it's going to kind of delve a little bit into my sports writing background in addition to my sci-fi stuff. So that's going to pose a really interesting challenge for me. I've never actually created a sport before. Like, I basically created an alien Grand Prix in Detron City Vice, and that required, you know, building some rules and kind of setting some boundaries as to what racers can do and what they can't. But it was, I've never written anything where the actual nuance of the sport, the intricacies and the rules and whatnot of the sport are going to factor so heavily into the story. And that's what this is. So before you can start crafting the story, which I think I've got a beat on what I want it to be, first I got to build the sport. I got to write a playbook. So, but I think that's going to be a lot of fun, big challenge. And again, I'll have more to come on that. So, all righty, well, that's going to take us down to our pod mail segment. So without further ado, let's grab that little sounder, shall we?
You got mail.
Well, as mentioned in the little stinger before this episode, guys, we are bringing ourselves on a new sponsor to the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast, and it's a partner that I'm actually really excited to bring aboard. Contrary to popular belief, we vet our sponsors on this show, guys. Like, I am a big fan of bringing sponsors on here that are not only gonna buy into the show and help us kind of advance our cause and get out to new audiences, but also sponsors that bring something to you, the listener. And if they don't have anything to offer you on that front, we're not going to take their money. That's just kind of the way this is supposed to work. We want this show to be entertaining for you guys, but we also want it to be a service that you can then take away and get something from, whether that's because you're a reader and you're just looking for new books to read, or whether it's because you're a writer and you're looking to branch out and build community and kind of find yourself some people to engage with there and grow your craft. That, the latter, is exactly what this group is all about. And by them, I mean the International Association of Science Fiction and Fantasy Authors. This is a group that does exactly that, guys. They have really two goals in their being. It is to create an environment where authors can come together, a community where authors can come together and develop their skills as writers and also learn how to market their books and take them to new readers, expand their readerships. But it's also a place that's built to help new readers connect with these authors and find new stuff to read. So it's very open. It's very, very user-friendly, and I highly encourage you guys to go check these folks out. You can find them at iasfa.org. Again, that's iasfa.org. You'll definitely want to check out their story bundles. They're constantly running giveaways, things like that for readers. So, for example, right now, December is Space Opera Month. So there's a huge book bundle there that you can sign up for, drop your email address, and get registered to be able to win that. Going to be lots of fantastic reads there from a lot of authors that you know of. If you're an author, I would also encourage you to go check these guys out. Go to their website. Again, that's iasfa.org. And make sure you sign up for an account and become a member with these guys. You'll get opportunities to get open calls for anthologies. Some of these are coming from publishers. Some of these are coming directly from ISFA themselves. And they put out bundles for specifically for their fans, and then you'll get paid for those. So just lots of stuff, man. I mean, if there's one thing I love about being an author, guys, it is that we have a fantastic community. Whether it's the other writers who we engage with at conventions and sit around bars and talk about stories, or coffee houses, talk about stories and the craft with, or whether it's hanging out with our readers at panels or at author tables and getting ideas from them based off of what they love to read from us. A group like ISFA, the International Association of Science Fiction and Fantasy Authors, that's what they're built to do, is to bring authors and readers together. So one more time, that website is iasfa.org. And we are proud as all get out to welcome them on board the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast as the presenting sponsors for our Pod Mail segment. All right, so without further ado, let's go to them their questions from them their listeners. And first up on tap tonight, we have Lucas. Yo, fellas, I saw Ian's post on Twitter today about the Spider-Man No Way Home cosplay and theatrical showing down in Panama City Beach next weekend. I've got to say, between the early press and the early trailers, I'm really psyched up for this one. Do you guys plan to see Spider-Man No Way Home? And if so, when do you think you'll catch it? Opening weekend or sometime later in the holidays? Kevin, you were a Spider-Man guy growing up through the 70s and stuff, and I know you used to actually read the comics. It's been one of Marvel's best franchises, man. I think from the casting of Tom Holland all the way down, they really, really... This series kind of embodies everything that is good, in my opinion, about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And this one is going to bring it all to one big crescendo. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that as a guy who's been reading Spider-Man for years?
I like it. I want to go to the theater and see it. We got a small theater here in town. And so it's more, I don't know, it's more intimate when you see a movie in a small theater. So I'm probably going to hit the theater here in town for that one. A lot of times I tend to wait till I can watch it at home on television, pause it when I want to and all that. But I think this one is theater worthy. So yeah. I'll be going.
Some are just meant to see on the big screen, man. We talked about this in a previous episode with Dune. I'm all about being able to kick it on the couch with my own popcorn and a beverage and the bathroom right around the corner when I want to hit a pause button. That's great. But some movies, you're just really selling them short if you don't catch them on the big, big screen. Rob, how about you, man? Were you ever a Spider-Man fan? Are you going to go check this one out?
I don't mind Spider-Man, but honestly, Dune was the first movie I'd seen in a decade in the theaters, and I don't think Spider-Man's going to be number two.
I mean, fair enough.
And that's not really, you know, necessarily. I don't have any great desire to see it. You know, like it's not jumping off the page at me. But you know, if it's on, I'll watch it.
I am going to be
interested. I'll watch all of them.
I am going to be interested to see how they pulled this off with bridging other incarnations of the Spider-Man franchise into this film. Like, I mean, listen, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2 years ago with Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire, that was a great casting. Like, he was a fantastic Octavius. So, you know, the fact that they're going to bring him back in this one, I think, is cool. Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin is going to be really fun. Obviously, everybody's expecting that they're probably going to have Maguire and Andrew Garfield make appearances in some capacity in this. And then while you're at it, why not go with, you know, full bore with Miles Morales? So, for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse kid, which was great.
Right. That was good. Yeah, it was really good.
So, yeah, I mean, this one's wide open, man. It's going to be wild to see how they bring all this down, but it's my hope that they nail it because I like the character, I like the franchise, and frankly, unlike Iron Man, I'd really like to see them go out on a high note. All right, next question comes to us from Greg. Huge news this past week in the world of college football coaching, namely Lincoln Riley to USC and Billy Napier to Florida. What were you guys' thoughts on these hires, and are there any other openings in college football that you're keeping an eye on headed into bowl season? Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Lincoln Riley to USC, that was a head-scratcher for me.
It's not a head scratcher. I
know why he did it. I know why he did it.
No,
you guys are going to say the SEC.
No. No, it was just a head scratcher that it came down the way that it did. It doesn't surprise me that he's moving on. I mean, listen, you can say what you want about the Pac-12, and I've said a lot. I don't have a ton of respect for that conference. I just don't think most teams are any good. But USC is a name brand institution right up there with Notre Dame, right up there with Texas, right up there with Oklahoma, right up there with Alabama, all right? Ohio State, Michigan, USC is of that ilk a program. So, you know, my man wants to get paid freaking $14 million a year to go chill in, like, the finer parts of L.A.? Not going to argue with that. Not going to argue with that in a bit.
That contract is huge even for a coach these days. So that
Yeah, but you know, he gets in that conference, and if they win, and he takes out the Ducks, he's going to get in the playoffs.
Rob, this is the SEC Homer rant about to come. Should I queue up on the stump? Like, do we need that here?
He is going to get in the playoffs from out there. If they beat the Ducks and he does well and they've got one loss or less, they're going to get in the playoffs out there. You know, they're going to get in.
Yeah.
Now, not being an SEC Homer or not, you got to win the SEC championship pretty much to get in over the SEC. You know, you can be a one loss, but if that one loss didn't get you into the dang SEC championship to begin with, you know, you're not, you know, odds are you're not going to get in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. How about the Napier hire over at Florida? I am, as a rival at Florida State, I will admit I was not happy to see that because I do think pretty highly of Billy Napier. I think he's a good coach.
He is.
He's a good recruiter who knows the South and the Southeast. Having spent time at Clemson, obviously spent time in Louisiana. He's got recruiting connections, and I think that could spell trouble for the SEC East. I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum on this program. I don't know that the SEC is ever going to change as long as Nick Saban is at Tuscaloosa. I mean, it is what it is. But a guy like Napier, he's young, he's fiery, he's smart, he's buttoned up, and he's got the recruiting connections to make Florida great again. And I hate the sound of saying that, but it's the honest truth. He has that kind of ability.
Well, and let's not forget what happened in at LSU.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Kelly. And honestly, Brian Kelly has done a fantastic job at coaching offensive linemen. I mean, if you look through the NFL, many, including like Zach Martin of the Cowboys, who's constantly seen as one of the best offensive linemen there is, and you go down the list, there are so many of his offensive linemen that are dominating at the next level. If he can bring that to LSU, which is a blue-collar kind of thing and a rough-and-tumble kind of thing, which fits just about any offense you want and fits any kind of style you want, but it does also fit the LSU Cajun style of getting in and doing the dirty work. If he can bring that, I think that's a fantastic hire for LSU.
I have not been on the wire today because I've been slammed doing other stuff. Is that a done deal, or is that speculated that he's making that move?
Done deal as far as I can tell.
Yeah, Notre Dame, yeah. He's not even talking to his own Notre Dame people, and they got a chance of getting in the playoffs.
He actually had a meeting this morning at 7 a.m. where he told his players, but, the coaching carousel is an embarrassing thing, to be honest, for the NCAA. But, I mean, from the standpoint of how it treats the players. And I guess, you know, we get a perfect example. I mean, Spencer Rattler has not had the year he expected. But not only did he get benched for Caleb Williams, but now Lincoln Riley is gone. What's his future? Well, it's not with Oklahoma because he's already entered the transfer portal.
Sure. Well, and that's the thing about college football in 2021. If you don't like where you're at, you can up and transfer. And you have that freedom and you have that ability. And I don't have a problem with that. I think this is the scenario that justifies that move. I think if you have committed to a school and to a coach and to a staff and they tell you, come on to Oklahoma, we can't wait to have you, and they're telling moms and grandmoms, hey, we're going to raise your boy, we're going to show him how to be a man, and we're going to show him how to be a football player, and you buy into that, and you get there, and you're there on campus for 3 months, and then they announce, peace out, I'm off to USC, you should be able to leave. Where I don't like that rule is when players can just up and decide in the middle of the season, you know what, I don't like the way I'm being treated here, I'm out, and they screw their team, which is what happened with Chuba Purdy at Florida State. You should at least have to wait until the end of the year and then make your decision about where you're going to go, but don't hang your team out to dry in midseason. That's not cool. All right, next question comes to us from Caitlin. Seeing as how you guys are all huge music nuts, have you had a chance to check out Peter Jackson's The Beatles Get Back series on Disney Plus? If you haven't, it's really good. If so, what are your thoughts? I have not had a chance to check this one out, Caitlin, but it is very much on my radar. I saw that dropped on Friday, I believe it was, the first episode of that. I was actually in North Carolina visiting family for Thanksgiving and just got back. So I have not had a chance to get on there and check that out yet, but it's very much on my radar. As I understand it, there's some really in the weeds stuff there that old school diehard fans of the Beatles are really going to get a kick out of. And Peter Jackson doesn't do anything half step, man. That guy lays his heart and soul into everything he does, and he's a giant Beatles nut. So I would expect this series to be nothing but stellar. And it's the freaking Beatles, man. I mean, come on. You can't go wrong with that. Kevin, you going to watch this one?
I am going to have to check it out. I got to finish up what I'm doing here. So, you know, it's not something I'll watch just as soon as it popped up kind of thing. But here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to check it out. So probably sit down with my youngest daughter. She's a huge, huge Beatles fan. Posters on her walls and everything, you know. So 22 years old and can probably sing along with almost every one of their tracks. It's crazy.
Nice. All right, next question comes to us from Alan. Much thanks to Chris and Ian for giving me some quality reading material during my Thanksgiving flight back and forth from Salt Lake City to Charleston. I have to admit, Mercurius was not the SI I was expecting. He was very different from Minerva, and very much in a good way. That made him unpredictable. What were the origins of that character, and where did he come from? Well, that's actually me. I was the one who created Mercurius. When Chris and I started down the path of creating this story, they told me, you know, we need an SI in this one. We teased it in Street Survivors that it was coming. And so we need to create a new character. This character has not been seen before. And he needs to have his own personality. Here are some things that he's able to do, i.e. his ability to jump hosts and that sort of thing. But we want him to have his own personality. And beyond that, go nuts. And so, you know, I mean, I knew this guy was going to be wicked powerful. I know that Minerva is out there, and that really set a high bar for what an SI needs to be. And so, you know, I know there's only a handful of these guys, and that got me to thinking, okay, they're all rivals. How does that work? All right, how does that work? All of these beings jockeying for position. In a lot of respects, it kind of reminded me of a sibling rivalry. All right, they're all their own elite class, again, jockeying for position. And I mean, good Lord, anybody that's grown up in a house full of siblings, you know how that goes. And so as everything kind of churned along, I kind of got the idea to be able to do this sort of the youngest one, the baby of the family. All right, the one who's the most mercurial. He's the hothead. All right, he's the one who is sick of taking it from his siblings and has finally decided, screw it, I'm going to step out and I'm going to do things my way because nobody else thinks I can do it. Well, watch this. I'm going to step out and I'm going to whip everybody's ass, and they're going to see exactly what I'm capable of. And that kind of became the beginnings of Mercurius. I also wanted him to be sophisticated. You're dealing with a being that's very old, very tens of thousands of years old. And, I mean, that meant smart. That meant slick. That meant very, very, very sharp, very articulate. So, you know, his speech, the way he talks, there was very much a cadence there that I was shooting for to give this guy a very slick, you know, persona. And I love the fact that one of our reviewers compared him to a Bond villain, because in a lot of respects, he is kind of that. Obviously, a lot more powerful, but a lot of the same motives, a lot of the same goals, a lot of the same attitude. So you want to kind of know where Mercurius came from. That was really kind of it. And really happy with it. I love the prologue where my man just basically, you know, walks onto a ship and lays waste to everybody around him to get what he came for. And I think you really get a taste in that opening stretch of what this character is. You know, from his interactions with the crew to the way he just, you know, the way he does his business, he doesn't play around. So that was pretty much it. All right, next question, final question, comes to us from Amy. December has always been one of my favorite months of the year because I'm a Christmas nut and I live for decorations. This year, however, December marks the return of one of Star Wars' greatest characters, Boba Fett, in his own series. If you guys were handed the reins to the Book of Boba Fett show, how would you write that story? Kevin, why don't you take lead on that one, man? That's varsity.
It is, and I liked how they did The Mandalorian. I liked that Wild West in space on a planet kind of thing, and so I would keep it more simple like that if that makes any sense.
Okay.
Yeah, just, you know, more like they did Mandalorian.
Okay.
Per se. So.
All right. Yeah, I'm very much on board with that. I think the fact that it's going to be set on Tatooine, or at least it's going to start on Tatooine at Jabba's palace, is a good indicator that you're going to get more of that. I'm really excited to see how they lean on the mythology of this character, because that's exactly where I would go. You asked how I would write this series. I would write it as sort of a, I mean, Boba now, after having seen what became of him in the Clone Wars and then afterwards, he's kind of like the ultimate Ronin character. Like the samurai with no master, with no code, with no nothing. Like, he's his own thing. He is a clone, but he's not a clone. So he's not accepted among the Mandalorians because he's not a real Mandalorian. He was a clone, but he's not accepted among the clones because he didn't fight for the Empire or for the Republic. Excuse me. He has no community. He is completely and totally an outsider, an outcast. And I say you lean on that. You know, they found him a kind of a partner in, I forget her name in the show, but Ming-Na is her name in real life. She's been in a ton of stuff. The sniper, Asian lady who's been in Marvel series galore and Stargate Universe, among other things. Right. Really, really good second player there, second chair to him. So, you know, I'm really anxious to see what they do with it, but that is the direction that I would go. You know, the man with no history, the man with no family, with no community, finding his way in the galaxy and just basically saying, screw it, I'll take what's mine. If nobody wants to give me anything, nobody wants to do anything, you know, do anything for me, then screw all of you. I will go take what is mine, and I'll make my destiny exactly what I want it to be. So that's what I would do. But all right, well, I think that's pretty well going to take us down to White Flag, so let's get busy with that and start to close this puppy out, shall we?
White Flag.
White Flag is, of course, a segment where we kind of tell readers what's on our radar coming into the next few weeks and months to come. Kevin, I'll go ahead and give you a lead on this, man, whether it's writing stuff, entertainment stuff, family stuff, man. We're heading into the holidays. What's on your docket coming up here in the next few weeks?
Well, I got to finish a couple short stories, and then Kevin Eikenberry and I are getting started on the next Peacemaker book, which is tentatively titled Redacted Weapon. So we got that starting. I'm also working on my third fantasy book so I can finish that trilogy, get some marketing done. I'm excited about the Salvage trilogy in German, obviously opening up over there, and then more books to come from CKP. Because, you know, as one of the three publishers in CKPI, that keeps me pretty busy. So
sure.
2022 is going to be a really busy year between writing and publishing. So, but as far as personal stuff, you know, obviously the SEC championship is Saturday, and then the playoffs are coming up and all that's good. So, can't wait to see what happens with all that.
Yeah. Rock on. Yeah, I'm on the writing front. I've got some more world building to do, and then I am probably going to give it through the holidays and start page one, chapter one on this new story 1st of January after New Year's. That is tentatively my plan. So got some things to do between now and then on the kind of the pre-production front, if you will, and then we'll get started on that first things first of January. On the personal front, looking forward to a few things. Cobra Kai Season 4 is coming back on Netflix. That's always a fun one. Cobra Kai Season 3 wasn't the best season by any stretch of the imagination, but it was still fun. It was great to see Elizabeth Shue show back up. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it yet. You know, but it was a fun one. Definitely looking forward to seeing what they do in Season 4. So that's going to be dropping in December. And then also, guys, for my fellow NASCAR fans who listen to this program, Kevin Harvick is going to be a guest on the Dale Jr. Download. I believe they're taping that as this is actually being recorded, which means it'll probably be out by the time this airs. For old school fans who remember the Daytona 500 of 2001, that's the one where Dale Earnhardt Sr. lost his life. There were a number of pivotal figures in that story, but you could make the argument that the biggest two were Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kevin Harvick. All right, Jr., obviously, because that was Earnhardt's son. Harvick, because he's the guy who got left picking up the pieces of what was then the three car. Kevin Harvick at that time was 22 years old, 23 years old, was racing in what was then called the Busch Series, and he was tapped to drive the new AOL car starting the following year in 02-03. Okay? Well, the sports Michael Jordan, in a blink of an eye, was gone. And they turned to this kid who was never supposed to be in the Winston Cup Series to drive arguably the most recognizable car in the sport. And they put a new number on it and a new paint scheme on it, but everybody knew what that car was. And just the trauma and the tragedy surrounding that team for a year, this kid as a rookie had to jump into that car and deal with all of that. And so his conversation with Dale Earnhardt Jr., I think, is really going to be one for the ages. And as a guy who's rooted for Kevin Harvick since the press conference where he was introduced in that car, I'm really looking forward to hearing what that conversation is going to be all about. But that is, of course, going to be happening on the Dale Jr. Download. I don't normally plug other podcasts on this show other than Future Books, our sister show, but that's going to be one worth catching out. Thanks again to Rob Howell for joining the show and for Todd Fanstock for coming by. Rob had to dip out early because he had some business to attend to, but that is quite all right. We'll look forward to catching him on the next episode. Speaking of, got a special Christmas episode lined up for you guys next time, so stay tuned for that. Details coming shortly on that. In the meantime, if you got questions for our next Pod Mail segment presented by the International Association of Science Fiction and Fantasy Authors, then you can email those to us at dudesinhyperspace@gmail.com or comment on any of our posts on social media. Also, don't forget to slide over to chriskennedypublishing.com, see all the many things they got going on for the Christmas season. You got family members and friends who need reads for the holidays? They got you covered. It's all at chriskennedypublishing.com. On behalf of Kevin, on behalf of Rob, I am Ian J. Malone saying we'll see you next time on the Dudes in Hyperspace podcast. See ya.